Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 154 for July 20th, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes.
Should it be exactly what Glenfiddich fans and subscribers come to expect, or could it be a little different?
That's Chef Jimmy Bradley of the Red Cat Restaurant in New York City. Jimmy just went through his first serious whiskey tasting as part of the panel to select this year's Glenfiddich Vintage Reserve Cask. He'll tell us what he learned in a few minutes. First, though, let's check the news. No word on deals this week for either Glendronach or Glenmurray, but a third Scottish distillery may be in play now. The Scotsman reports the owners of Tullibardine are considering several unsolicited offers for the distillery. As we heard from distillery manager John Black way back in episode 29 of Whiskey Cast in March of 2006, a group of investors led by Michael Beamish and Douglas Ross bought Tullibardine out of mothballs in 2003. They've been running the distillery since then, and Beamish told the Scotsman there's no reason to sell it unless someone comes up with a good price. It's believed the offers value Tullibardine at around $30 million. Meanwhile, another distillery is coming out of mothballs. Chivas Brothers is firing up the stills at Breval for the first time since 2002, when Pernod Ricard shut it down because of excess capacity. According to the Malt Whiskey Yearbook, Breval opened in 1973 as Brays of Glenlivet. The name was changed to Breval in 1994. Whiskey purists generally hate putting ice in their drinks, so the thought of putting the entire bottle in the freezer may drive the purists even battier. That's exactly, though, what Edrington hopes newcomers will do with its latest version of the famous Grouse. The Snow Grouse blend is going on sale in duty-free stores for the next 6 months as a test. It's designed to be poured straight out of the freezer. It's not a new idea, though. Johnny Walker has been promoting the same idea for the last couple of years as just one of the ways to enjoy its Gold Label blend. It's taken a few years, but construction is finally underway on Canada's newest distillery. Groundbreaking took place this week for the Shelter Point Distillery on Vancouver Island in British Columbia. Production is expected to begin sometime next year on what will eventually be Canada's second single malt whiskey. Nova Scotia's Glenbreton was the first single malt produced in Canada. I've mentioned Morrison Beaumont's revamping of its Auchentoshan single malts in recent episodes. Now there's a new website for Auchentoshan as well, along with a unique prize. Between now and October, site visitors will be able to register to win a bottle of 50-year-old Auchentoshan, distilled back in 1957. There's a link at the Whiskey Cast website. That's also where you'll find the Whiskey Cast store, powered by Amazon.com, and there are a number of new additions to the store this week. Misako Udo's encyclopedic The Scottish Whiskey Distilleries is finally available in the U.S. through Amazon, and it's now in the store, along with F. Paul Picoult's new edition of Kindred Spirits 2, Andrew Jeffords' Peat Spunk and Spirit, and the Ennius MacDonald Classic Whiskey. Just use the store link at the top of the page to do your shopping. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Dundee Dell in Omaha, Nebraska will hold its annual mega tasting of whiskeys on August 4th and 7th, along with a Highland Park tasting on August 14th. Whiskey Fringe in Edinburgh is the weekend of August 9th and 10th. The Brandy Library in New York City will hold Spirit School classes on Scotches on August 26th and September 4th, and American Whiskies on August 28th. And Milroy's of Soho in London will host a tasting of whiskies from around the world on September 10th in London. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the Whiskey Cast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla at Laphroaig.com. Several weeks ago, I mentioned the Glenfiddich's plans for its annual Vintage Reserve selection this fall, but this past week I had the chance to talk with a member of the tasting panel that picked that cask. Jimmy Bradley is the chef and owner of two New York City restaurants, the Red Cat and the Harrison, and he got the chance to live almost every whiskey lover's dream.
Interestingly enough, I believe I was picked as a chef and perhaps someone who has a little bit of experience working with their palate. In other words, there was a lot of whiskey aficionados and whiskey writers that were invited, and then there was two chefs, and it seemed to me that they wanted to round out the bunch.
And tell me about the philosophy at your restaurant, of your cooking style, your palate, and what made you uniquely qualified for this panel.
Well, the style at the restaurants might not necessarily have qualified me, but I'll tell you about both, and we can decide from there. The style of the restaurants is a little bit less is more. We're interested in focusing on pure flavors, unadulterated, so buying the best ingredients and doing very few things with them so they sell themselves, and they're beautiful in their singular approach. A lot of restaurants like to build multiple flavors and techniques and fusion and so on, and we're really not that interested in that. If you have a perfect tomato, you shouldn't really mess around with it. So the style of the restaurant is to appeal to the seasons and to appeal to the integrity of the ingredients, not just look at me and watch what I can cook with this. And then perhaps the similarities with why I was selected is a little bit along the same lines of if you have people that have a plethora of knowledge, an abundance of knowledge and desire to speak about a specific product, perhaps you round them out with people that are very comfortable with their palate, their sense of taste and smell, but also aren't necessarily steeped in the one aspect being whiskey.
And you have done cooking with whiskey, of course, in the past, right?
Yeah. I would say we do a little bit more cooking with whiskey in the chillier months, perhaps, you know, November through March. But we usually have one or two whiskey-flavored sauces or dishes or desserts on the menu.
Tell me what it was like walking into the room as a whiskey neophyte in terms of tastings and connoisseurship with a bunch of whiskey experts. What was it like to walk into that room?
It was amazing. I mean, there's two different thoughts. I'm pretty comfortable with the room in the sense that I've been to many, many wineries and such around the world, and they have certain similarities, and then they have major differences. And some of the similarities are the way they smell and feel. Obviously, a whiskey distillery doesn't smell like a winery, but they do have similar characteristics of old wood with spirits in them laying around and aging. So you have this sense of, wow, this is timeless. This has been here for a long time, and there's a lot of culture and heritage, and you can smell it and you can feel it, and those are really neat, very authentic things. And then in terms of just being in the Glenfiddich Distillery, it's an amazing operation that they have, a 24-hour a day, 365-day a year. A couple loads of malted barley a couple times a day come in, and they have a world-class, unbelievably beautiful and form and functioning distillery that was just a great pleasure to see firsthand.
Paint the picture for me with words, if you can, of what it's like to walk into the warehouses where they had you doing some of the nosings?
Well, it's probably 80, 90,000 square feet of dirt floor and basically probably granite walls. Really the style, the design was the style in which I expected it to be. Old world. No bells and whistles, just all function. As I said before, you know, a nice dirt floor to impart the nature, the natural aspects into the aging process. When you walk in, you feel hundreds of years of craftsmanship. You see it and you smell it. It's very sensorily aware because of the amount of the, I don't know the proper word, the amount of the product that's there in front of you, and the way that the aged barrels smell and the dirt smells, and you can smell some salt in the air. It's just really, really quite unique and very special, very different than any other whiskey distillery that I'd ever been to in America.
Let's get down to the actual tasting. How did it work?
It was pretty impressive. The master blender, David, picked six barrels out of Lord only knows how many. And the purpose was to make a commemorative vintage barrel. So it will be released in 2008, and we needed to pick one of the six barrels to be released this year. I believe they make 500 bottles out of a barrel. So David selected three barrels from 1977 and three barrels from 1975. Then I would say there was probably six or eight gentlemen who tasted from the barrels. And we went around and we had notes. They made tasting sheets for us, and so we sipped and then we made notes and then we discussed it and then we went around again and again. And it really only took us two times to get to the, actually three times to get to picking our favorite one. And when I say that, we tasted three and then we discussed everything. And then we tasted three more and discussed everything. So we had our two favorites of each of those. And then we put our two favorites up against each other, and we picked one group favorite. So I had never been part of a tasting that I was trying to pick one specific thing. A lot of times there's many different angles or avenues that you're pursuing at the same time. This one I found to be pretty neat in the sense of bringing six or eight people together to speak about something that's similar but also quite unique, and the differences that all the people brought to the table, I thought was really kind of interesting and refreshing.
On that, did you have any trouble coming together in terms of a common language? Because I know that sometimes we'll read tasting notes that some folks have written where they're talking about flavors that are unique to their own culture. Folks from the UK will write about a whiskey tasting like Christmas cake or something, and that's not a flavor that we're familiar with in the States. And we'll talk about flavors that aren't quite familiar over in the UK or in Europe or other parts of the world. Were there any kind of cross-communications errors in the panel?
You know, I didn't think so. It was a pretty broad panel, and if somebody used a word, you might say, do you mean something like this or something like that? So we had a little bit of a self-glossary in terms of in our discussions. The one that we selected was a sherry oak cask, and it had some nice notes from having been previously used as a sherry cask. You know, it had a little bit of an almond or a nutty aspect to it, and the color was a certain hue of rich gold, amberish. So I didn't think that there was a breakdown. I just thought that everybody had a different opinion, and then after talking through it, everybody could see each other's opinions and or help arrive in the selection process. I think the overall thought was some people thought it should, if Glenfiddich is going to make a commemorative barrel of 1977 sherry cask scotch and they're going to release it in 2008, should it be exactly what Glenfiddich fans and subscribers go to come to expect, or could it be a little different? And some of us thought it might be more interesting if it was a little different, and some of us thought that the purity of the statement was the statement. So we discussed that for a little bit, but other than that, we kind of came up with the conclusion that if you're going to do it once a year and every year it's going to be different, it's okay if it's different.
Are you hooked now?
You better believe it. Not only am I hooked on the juice, I'd enjoy a nice Scottish holiday coming up sometime, preferably in the next couple years.
I have to ask, are you going to add this to the bar at your restaurants?
Well, they promised me a bottle, so I'm going to add that to the bar at my house, and then I'm going to pick up a bottle for the restaurant just to see what kind of interest it has, and depending on that, perhaps, perhaps more.
The Vintage Reserve will go on sale this fall for about $750 a bottle. No word on what a dram will go for at the Red Cat. By the way, you'll find a link for Jimmy's restaurants at the WhiskeyCast website. Finally, I don't use this space for commentary very often, but the last couple of days I've been feeling a bit of a rant coming on, and I hope you'll indulge me for a second. A couple of days ago, I received an email from Serge Valentin of the Malt Maniacs. His son lost a close friend this week. The young man was struck and killed by a drunk driver while he was walking along a road in France. Now, we all know what can happen when we overindulge, and if you're listening to this show and you're a regular listener, you're probably responsible enough to let someone else do the driving. But let's face it, there is simply no damn excuse for drinking and driving. Let's set the example for our friends. Life's just too precious. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. Next time around, we'll take a look at a unique whiskey that combines the best of two worlds, Scotch and bourbon, with a third world thrown in for measure. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com, and I'd love to hear from you. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you, and I mean it, that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.